And with a look in the backcountry on the phone with us, Evelyn Lees from the Utah Avalanche Forecast Center. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. No new avalanches reported from the backcountry yesterday. Just a small slough over in West Monitor. You know, someone purposely kicked a cornice to see what would happen. It was just shallow. And people were finding some good turning and riding conditions in that little bit of new snow we got. So the snow is stable in most areas, and avalanches are generally unlikely. However, there's still that isolated chance an avalanche could step down into old snow if you got into some really steep terrain. So even though it's low danger, it doesn't mean there's no danger. Avalanches can be triggered, and the most experienced people out there are still avoiding the bullseye avalanche terrain. So they're staying off the steep north and northeast-facing slopes at the mid and upper elevations and enjoying the riding and touring and skiing on other aspects in the lower angle slopes. The other things to watch out for are just, again, a few small loose sloughs or small windrifts might be able to be triggered today. And if it gets warm enough, a few wet loose sloughs could become an issue.
Okay. Hey, thank you.
Thank you.
816, good morning. Well, in addition to the expenditure of the $10.4 million for 461 acres of property there on U.S. 40, on the phone joining us with details is Summit County Council Member Chris Robinson. Good morning, Chris.
How are you, Leslie?
I'm well, thanks. So a small geography question. When you combine this Gilmore parcel with the Triangle parcel, basically it surrounds the UDOT maintenance shed. Well, it looks like we've lost Chris. Chris, can you hear me? No, you're cutting out.
I don't know.
That's
how
better.
That other than...
Well, I can hear you now. I couldn't
I
hear
can
you
hear
before.
You fine.
Okay.
Okay.
So basically I asked, when you combine this with the Triangle parcel, it's basically surrounding the UDOT maintenance shed?
Yes, that maintenance shed is probably not going away. At one time back in the era when MIDA was trying to develop their big play there, Stuart Adams and some of the legislatures were going to appropriate a bunch of money to move it, but I don't see that happening anytime soon. It'll just be what it is.
So why are we spending $10.4 million on this? I mean, basically, not much of the property can be developed, and it's got the tailings contamination.
Well, there's a in the northwestern corner, there's about 150 acres that is good, clean land right next to Home Depot that can be developed. And there's other clean lands out. The main contaminants is in the wetland area, floodplain area, where we wouldn't develop anyway. So what we've basically done here is, the city and the county bought the Triangle 10 years ago for the purposes of developing it. And as time went on, we decided as a council that that midsection along the east side of US 40, we wanted to preserve as open space to tie into our wildlife tunnel accessing Round Valley and to tie into the rail trail. And so what we effectively have done here is, we've moved the land that, on the Triangle that we were going to develop onto this very developable piece up next to Home Depot and the Silver Creek Village, and we're protecting all of this other land. We're also facilitating the cleanup in the right time and in the right way. To clean up the floodplain, there's no reason to clean up that which is in this part of in what we call Lower Silver Creek now, because the upstream parts in Prospector and Richardson Flat area are still contaminated, and the contaminants are waterborne. It would just recontaminate. And so the idea here is that we've made available lands that are going to be open space anyway for on-site remediation in a future day, which basically means that they would just come in and excavate out soils in the floodplain and excavate soils out in the uplands and swap places with them and revegetate. And it will create a very nice wet meadow along the rail trail, and it will create the same open spaces for recreation that we have in the uplands.
So how close are you to coming to an agreement with the EPA and other agencies to do this?
very close. I mean, we've been working on agreeing on the environmental claim settlement amounts with EPA for probably 2 years. It's gone all the way to Washington and the Department of Justice. And so now the administrative order on consent is the trigger, and that's the document that memorializes what we've done. And the heavy lifting was agreeing on those dollar amounts. And we expect to have see drafts of the administrative order on consent in the next few weeks and, you know, in the next couple of months, finalizing that element.
So
we still have a 90-day or 120-day due diligence, I forget how long, to do other things regarding the property, but that's our timeline.
The purchase price will be funded by open space bond money. So how much are we talking of the 10.4 is coming from open space money?
Well, initially it all will. There's a little accounting we need to do. For instance, the Triangle parcel was half purchased in 2008. With non-open space money, and then half purchased in 2017 as part of Bonanza Flat with open space. You'll recall we purchased the city's interest, their half interest out of it. And so we have basically $2.25 million of non-open space money in the Triangle now. And if and when we convert the 112 acres to a non-open space use, we would have to, you know, reimburse the open space account for any non-open space land. And, you know, right now we don't need to do that because, you know, until it changes, it's all open space.
So what's the density allowed on the developable property of this?
Well, the density right now is rural residential 1 to 20. So it's, you know, in that whole in the 461 acres, we bought 23 units approximately, assuming there aren't other lots of record. But in general, there's 23 units of density on the whole purchase that could be a current zoning that could be clustered on the parcel, the development lands, as we call them, adjacent to Home Depot.
So is the county thinking about trying to increase the density there?
Well, the county is going to be looking at how to program that property. We know we have some institutional uses that we want to put there in the fine print of our purchase agreement with Park City. We talk about there being 10 acres being made available. When we bought the Triangle, and remember I said a minute ago that the Triangle was owned by the city and the county for purposes of developing some institutional uses, some municipal kind of uses, we have a provision that we have to make 10 acres available to them. So this, of the 112 acres, we've got 10 acres there. There's a floating parcel out there for the LDS Church of 5 acres for a church site that was part of the Triangle deal. And then, you know, we've been seeking, and I'm not saying it's going here, but Recycle Utah has been looking for a permanent home. We need to figure that all out, but we will be likely making some zoning changes there.
So when supporters of the Oscarthart Farm were lobbying the council, you said that you were working on another open space acquisition. Is this it?
Yeah, this is one of several. We've been working on this for many years, and this one's just taken a lot longer. I should say, incidentally, that this transaction does not preclude Oscarthorpe's. We've purposefully, you know, for the time being at least, left enough powder dry to do Oscarthorpe's if we can ever come to terms. Now, that may change as we have a couple of other things in the hopper. It's kind of a first-come, first-served.
Okay. I got lots to get through here. Let's kind of try and blow through this. What was your reaction to Pat Putt's presentation about some of the problems around Kimball Junction? Pedestrians have trouble getting around. We also see the unattractive side views, backs of buildings. Glenn Wright wondering if we need a moratorium on building there. Do we?
No. I mean, I don't, first of all, there's not a lot of land other than the, in the tech park that's available for development there. And, you know, it was never designed as a pedestrian-friendly community. And we, you know, when we had the, I forget what it was called, Kimball Junction Associates or Village or something that came before the council a few years ago when things were redone and the Richard Place land was acquired. Some of us at that time, especially Sally Elliott, thought we should have, you know, we're just putting a Band-Aid on it, meaning that we're perpetuating a big center of a lot of parking with no connecting pathways and no real walkability. And so now this committee is, you know, evaluating ways of, you know, maybe there's some structured parking that's built out in the middle and, you know, it be remade. The other big problem that we have in that neighborhood is 224 bisects it. And so there's, you know, it's very difficult on foot to cross over from one side to the other to get to our transit center, you know, from the east side. You know, you've got a, yeah, you, there's a stoplight there and you cross six lanes of traffic. It's not, you know, it's not a great connection. And so working with UDOT and trying to come up with some other solutions. But I'm in favor of the commission, the committee's work, and I hope we can get some tangible takeaways.
Yeah, we also
that we can implement in our lifetimes.
We also saw the county council clearly wanting to find some remote parking areas in the basin, which can help divert traffic before it gets into Park City. But you guys did not have a consensus on what site to give first priority. Chris, you felt like we should focus on the tech center rather than the Ecker Hill. To get a tech center park and ride, do we have to change the agreement there?
Well, yeah, I mean, we don't own the tech center. And it has a development agreement as a tech center, and there have been many rumblings over, you know, many years now, several years, about what should the tech center be. You know, there have been people claiming that, well, we're going to buy the tech center and with the county, you know, engage in reopening the development agreement and trying to repurpose it to something better. And you know, my sense is that it's struggling in its current configuration, and that the owners, the Boyer Company, you know, are open to other things, including a sale of it. And so that part of it is, you know, to the right deal, or, you know, part of it could maybe be purchased for that. The bigger problem is, how do you get people into it? How do the vehicles get into it to park? With 224 and the Kimball Junction interchange configured as present, how do you do that? And that's the part that makes it go down the list, maybe, because Defton, we don't, you know, it's not on any, it's not on UDOT's radar. There's no money, and you know, I was a little strident about in challenging the Ecker Hill lot. The one thing came away from that resonated with me was that if you improve Kilby Road up to the lot and then you have good transit, you go immediately to our transit center along Kilby Road from the lot east. You know, you don't have to get onto 224 and navigate Landmark Drive. And so that is meaningful to me, but I really think we should gather all of the interested parties and have a discussion about it. You know, the employers, those that might use it, and the neighbors, and see what people think. Because it's a lot of money. It's a fair amount of money upgrading Kilby Road. And you know, it's $8 million doesn't come easy.
Okay, I've got just this final topic here. Hearing on Chapter 3 of the East County Code, we should note that nearly 100 people turned up to the council chambers and had an overflow room of some 40 people. Much of the comment was at the micro level, people talking about their specific property, how the code changes would affect them. But let's talk a little bit about one of the broad proposals, and that is to take away density from lands that are on the highway corridor zone. The county's proposal has been that those owners will keep their density. It'll just be set back from the highway, but if some owner's land is wide along the highway and not deep, are we taking away their density?
In those instances, we would, if we don't come up with some kind of an equalizer. I mean, it's not a one-size-fits-all. If you have a lot of frontage and very little depth and you're in the highway corridor zone, it says you get one unit per acre in the first 250 feet of depth, which is exactly the thing we don't want to perpetuate, but that's what it says today you can do, then you're going to come up on the short end of the stick. If you have parcels got a lot of depth and you have high density along the frontage for 250 feet of depth, and then you have one unit to 40, and we move the whole parcel to one unit to five, then you're coming out a winner. So there are some winners and losers, and we heard from some of both. And the losers were parcel specific, saying, hey, you know, we had 30 units, now we got five. What can you do? And we're going to study that.
So do we need to look at things on a case-by-case basis? Or do you get into problems doing that?
Well, we have a safety valve already, which is that the map we're trying to approve is for the whole eastern part of the county, but it's not set in concrete. So we're creating these zones, and if we've missed a place, or if a landowner in the future wants to come in and say, hey, back in 2018 you zoned me to this, but here's the reasons why I should have this other zone, then they can do that on a case-by-case basis. We're doing a wholesale rezone, which you know, is hard to solve every problem, and one. Our most dense zone right now is 1 unit to 5 acres. We may cut that in half and have another zone of 1 unit to 2.5 acres or something, plus or minus that, which could be a solution to some of those losers.
Okay. I need to leave it there. Chris, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you, Leslie.
Summit County Council member Chris Robinson. Well, as the Utah legislature closes in on its third week, we're checking in with various local organizations to see what they've got their eyes on this session. One of those is the president and CEO of the Park City Chamber Bureau. He joins me now in the studio, Bill Malone. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So one of the biggest issues, of course, for the Chamber, the annual tourism marketing fund amount, given the lackluster season we've seen because of the snow, what does that mean for next year's funding?
Well, basically in the governor's budget, he's proposing for the Tourism Marketing Performance Fund, a budget of $22.5 million. That's up from last year's $21 million. However, if you were to go back to the formula that has been used, because last year's number was flat with the previous year, the actual ask, I believe, by the Utah Tourism Industry Association is a budget of $24 million. So we'll see where that ends up. That's based on the formula and the fact that the industry has grown to generating in the economy an $8.2 billion tourism economy and generating $1.2 billion in state and local taxes. So it has been a good ROI for the state, but I'm sure there's a lot of things that come along with the Tourism Marketing Performance Fund. Those things such as the co-ops that go to organizations such as ours and Heber. Same thing in terms of the Utah Sports Commission, which has such an active role in terms of the bid with the Olympics, et cetera. So there's a lot that comes out of that money.
Okay. Also, a couple different bills related to transient room taxes. It sounds like both of them may be bad for the tourism industry.
Well, yeah. I mean, one that caught our attention immediately, which is Senate Bill 136, which we're not, I don't think, anticipating seeing in a transportation bill, transient room tax, as a funding mechanism of that. And it started off, I believe it at like a first go round, we saw it at a 4.68 increase, and now it's been lowered to a 2.68 increase on transient room tax by the state that would go for transit and transportation improvements. Our trouble on that is that the state is a new entity of getting into the transient room tax business. This has always been a municipal and a county funding mechanism. But it would take Park City, if this were to pass, it would take Park City to a transient room tax rate of 15.45%, which I don't think I know of another ski resort community that has a tax that high. Pretty high for major cities in itself. So a lot of concern over that. We always wonder about how those taxes affect customers. But when you look at our competition, I think Vail is at 9.8, Jackson Hole's at 8. You look at 15.45, I think could have a kind of a chilling effect on our group business. Corporate meeting planners, groups like that that are paying large bills and booking large groups and with large numbers of rooms.
Yeah, but given just the convenience of it, there seems to be just some inherent savings in coming here, even though you're maybe paying more taxes.
We would do our best, obviously, to spin that in terms of what you get for it. But it is definitely a competitive issue when you look at what other ski resorts are paying,
sure,
who we compete against every day for that group business.
And the way that I read it is that it would basically double the tax on rental cars. And so is that to be used for road projects? Is that what's behind this?
It appears that it would be for all different types of projects, both UTA and UDOT. Projects, and that the dollars would be spent where they felt it was the best and not just segregating them between the two agencies. So I think there's a lot of positive things behind the bill in streamlining and dealing with some of the governance issues that have been public relations problems, I think, for UTA over the years. So I think the legislature's trying to grapple with that. Our concerns is that going into the vast majority of road usage is us on that, and to conveniently go and try to put that cost off onto somebody else, we just have looked at the fact that transient room taxes have traditionally had a nexus to something to do with visitation, and this is a stretch on that nexus.
Alcohol bills, with the drop in the blood alcohol content scheduled to go in later this year, are tweaks being made now to that?
We haven't seen anything on that yet. Kind of anticipating a lot of times the alcohol bills come later in the session when the clock's ticking, and sometimes we don't make the best decisions when the clock's ticking at the end. In fact, one that's being worked on right now has a lot of impact on some local establishments, trying to tweak and fix some of the unintended consequences that came out of last year's legislations, and those impacts especially to types of restaurant that we think of as restaurants, but are dining clubs, the wall that had to go up near the bar, the kind of with the fence, the pony wall, as it was called. We have, historic buildings that are housing restaurants and bars in town. There's a lot of limitations that our places have in terms of meeting those requirements in terms of space and trying to keep in line with local ordinances or fire safety ordinances. So there's a lot going on that I don't think was ever intended when we were kind of as an industry probably celebrating the fact of the Zion's Curtain coming down. But what were the unintended consequences of that, and what were the new rules? And so there's a bill out there, I believe it's HB 442, which is trying to address and exempt some of those situations.
Okay. Yeah, because we went from a curtain to a wall, like
right.
You said. Yeah, that was interesting. And then what about the restaurant bar licensing? Tell me about that.
That's part of that one.
Okay.
That is where you know, there's just so many different types of licenses here, and it has to do with not only physical nature, but then also the split between what is revenue from alcohol and what is revenue from food. And so those are some of the things that they're trying to tweak to get into a line that can be, actually be done by some of the establishments. One that we're looking at on that we saw come out, HB 107, which is an alcohol bill, but it really is addressing kind of a problem we saw last year. Here in over the course of the winter. I don't know if you remember where we've seen those signs popping up about what was valid identification in terms of age. This would allow international driver's licenses to be accepted forms of age proof. And we were having some very awkward moments, I believe, last year where people were instructed that they needed to, if there are international guests, needed to bring their passports to the liquor store in order to buy a bottle of wine. This kind of takes care of it and allows it to be used with a driver's license once again.
Okay. Real quick, let's talk a little bit about some amendments to the hourly wage increase. What's this?
Yeah, we've just spotted on that one. That one's come out recently, HB 117. Don't know too much about in terms of whether it has much traction, but it really is dealing with proposing to raise minimum wage to $10.25 an hour effective July of 18, and then $12 an hour in 2022. You know, it seems like a foreign subject to Summit County. Our minimum wage is we probably are going hundreds of jobs unfilled this ski season, and I'm not sure this bill has much impact on us. Might be in other parts of the state, but gosh, just looking at the unemployment rates, I'm not sure the timing of this matches up with what the reality is occurring in the state.
All right. And then real quick, of course, we saw yesterday the resolution to continue on with our exploration of bringing back the Olympics.
Yeah, that was unanimous in the legislature. And that's happy to see that. And, you know, it basically instructs the exploratory committee to go do its work and put together all the necessary pieces to actually bid on it. It's kind of was 16 years ago today. The game started here, so it's I don't know if my outlook goes out for 12 more years, and I could put it in for that time quite yet. But there's a lot of excitement about it, and there's a lot has happened in terms of Olympic legacy in this community and how we've connected to that in those 16 years. So it's an exciting time, and it's exciting to see. The state getting serious about that.
Yeah, there were lots of public support back in the 90s for hosting the Olympics, and then that was, you know, reaffirmed when we saw people reaffirm the bond and referendum. But have we done any recent public studies on that?
Yeah, there was actually Dan Jones' study this past fall on how did the public feel about going in. And I believe statewide it came out at 89% favorable rating for let's bid again. So I think there's a lot of things that there's probably a lot of people in the state that weren't here in 02 that this might be feel different about that. But I think many people who were here in 02 understand the dynamics of the fact that there could be a lot of things that can be done for communities as a result of the games. And just going back to thinking about, you know, transit center here, fiber optics, some of the things that came along for the games, and now thinking about them into the future, what are some of the problems that we would like to see the games be a catalyst to help solve?
Okay, Bill, I need to leave it there. Thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Bill Malone is the CEO of, well, with the snow year that we haven't seen in decades, we thought it was time for an update from the agency that sells Utah's greatest snow on earth. Nathan Rafferty is the CEO of Ski Utah. He joins me now on the phone. Good morning, Nathan.
Morning, Leslie.
So what's your assessment of the snow ride season so far?
You know, I'd say better than expected. Considering when you look out the window, it's, you know, not quite the season that we'd love to see, and certainly not what we saw last year. But you know, resorts are hanging in there, and I'm hearing good things from other segments of the industry, lodging and transportation and restaurants, you know, and great feedback from guests when they get out and ski. And, you know, it may not be snow up to their knees like we had the last couple of years, but people are having a good time skiing.
Yeah, May Street was hopping last night. I mean, there people are definitely here, so at least shopping and eating. Do we have early numbers on ski numbers?
You know, we really don't. We don't get those numbers until the end of the season. Talking to the resorts, they say, you know, it's pretty safe to say it's not going to be a record season, but, you know, especially the resorts that have snowmaking, they're doing just fine. And, you know, I think we're going to end up the season in pretty good shape. But I tell you what, the, you know, real kudos goes to both Deer Valley and Park City and those snowmaking teams, and have, you know, what you described as the lowest snow season in the last couple of decades, which is true, but having 59 lifts open in the town of Park City, 59 of the 62 available between these two resorts is just amazing.
So you've always said that, you know, Mother Nature and snow is our biggest advertising, you know, coup. But how do you convince people to come when there is no natural snow?
You know, we kind of pivot a little bit and talk about a great time to take a lesson, how fantastic the skiing is and the groomers, and show lots of family shots. And it's not the, you know, the deep powder that we often show, but it's a great time to take a lesson and be with your family. And you certainly don't have kids complaining when it's 40 degrees and sunny outside like you do when it's snowing or really, really cold. So, you know, talking to guests that are out on the hill, they're having a great time.
Yeah, I saw you guys pushing, it sounded like a $300 discount on a Delta flight if you booked a three-night stay. So that's basically a free ticket, yeah?
Yeah, it's an awesome deal. The Park City Lodging Association put together, and then we're helping advertise with our partners, Delta Airlines, book a minimum three-night stay at almost any Park City hotel, any of them that are members of the Lodging Association, and you get that Delta gift card. So, yeah, you know, huge bonus to have a great partner like Delta and an airport right down the street.
Yeah, and the airlines must be feeling it, because I have seen some killer flight deals from Southwest, $59 a round trip. JetBlue had a round trip airfare for $96. So they must be seeing their numbers drop off too. And
yeah, you know, I don't know. It's a tough season all over the West. You know, you look at California and Colorado, you know, two of our biggest competitors, and I know they're not seeing the snow like they'd like to see either. So it can be tough for everybody.
So you're an optimistic guy, but what if this is just a hint of what's to come given climate change? I mean, does Ski Utah even think about this as kind of a reality rather than an anomaly?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, if you're not an optimist in the ski industry, you're in trouble. But if you grab your skis and went out skiing today on any one of those 59 chairlifts that are open today and said this is as bad as it's going to get, I think you would be pretty happy because the ski conditions are fantastic and people are walking up and down Main Street, like you said, and enjoying dining and nightlife and bars and restaurants and all that. So, but, you know, it does make you think, doesn't it?
Yeah. I mean, do you guys have, are you thinking ahead though?
You know, absolutely. We're, you know, we work with groups like Protect Our Winters and do what we can to help work on everything from clean air down in Salt Lake City to be thinking, you know, really far ahead. And really, Utah is in a better position than most. You know, we've got resorts that are generally above 6,000 feet here. You know, there's going to be a lot more trouble in the ski industry before it gets to us, you know, with resorts just about everywhere besides Colorado and Utah.
Yeah. So are we going to make it to April, given the low base numbers? And once we start seeing longer days, is it gone?
Yeah, no way, for sure. We'll get to April. And, you know, I have a feeling, you know, the faucet's going to turn on. We're going to see a few powder days before the season is done. You know, it's only, we're barely into February. And as you know, things have a tendency to turn around here pretty quickly, and we'll be complaining about too much snow before the season's out, I have a hunch.
Yeah. Well, and then we always see lots of snow, like April 9th, the day after the resorts close.
Yeah, and March is typically one of our heaviest snowfall months. So don't put those powder skis away just yet.
Yeah, so what do March bookings look like? Any idea?
All of the numbers that I've looked at were kind of pre-January 1st. And I know there was a little softness in March before the snow didn't fall, as it were. But, we're taking a hard look at it. And we've got a bunch of spring promotions, like spring brews, and like you mentioned, that Delta deal. So I think with a little luck and a little snowfall, things will fill in nicely.
Okay. Nathan, anything else you wanted to add?
I think that's it. Go out and go skiing. It's easy as a local to get kind of down on a season like this. But, you know, when I start to do that, I throw my skis on my feet and get outside. And it's pretty darn nice skiing out there.
Okay. Hey, thanks.
Thank you.
Nathan Rafferty, CEO of Ski Utah. You're listening to the local news. 2018 Winter Olympics kick off tonight in prime time with the opening ceremony in the studio from Youth Sports Alliance. I have Executive Director Emily Fisher, and we hope that one of the athletes, Sam Masuka, will be joining us as well. Good morning, Emily.
Good morning.
Well, let's start with Park City Nation. This is something that you put together once you saw, just how many local kids were participating?
Yeah, really, it started in 2014 after the games. We saw that if Park City had competed as its own country, it would have finished 10th in the medal count, I think tied with France. And so we sort of started tracking Park City Nation earlier this year to see just how many athletes are going to be in Pyeongchang from Park City Nation, and it's now a total of 54 athletes, so very exciting.
Yeah, all sports?
All sports, all disciplines, which is really exciting. We have, all different sports represented, and we also have three athletes that have received scholarship funding from our Stein Erickson Endowment, direct funding, that are at the 2018 Games. So that's really exciting.
Yeah. Can you tell us who those are?
Yes. Mm-hmm. So Will Rhodes, he's a Nordic ski jumper, and he actually competed today and qualified just recently for the Normal Hill competition. So they had qualifying even before opening ceremonies. And then Bradley Wilson, who's a men's mogul skier, he was a 2014 Olympian, and he's also a 2018 Olympian. And then our other one is Bubba Newby, who's he's a snowboarder representing Ireland. So, I'm sorry, he's a freestyle skier representing Ireland. Yes.
So these were kids that received scholarships, but you've also, I'm guessing, helped a lot of them, maybe even just with the, you know, getting introduced to the sport?
Yeah, getting introduced to the sport through our Get Out and Play program, or just supporting their member clubs. So we try to provide direct funding to all of those clubs that then lowers the fees for everyone. So supporting all of those club athletes as well.
All right. So in terms of scholarships, with the endowment now, you're able to make those basically annually, huh?
Well, actually, I'm glad you brought that up. So we do scholarships on September 1st, and then we have a second round of scholarships that's coming up March 1st. So any athletes that are in our member clubs can apply for a scholarship March 1st. And the reason we do that is because we find athletes qualify for competitions late in the season, and they may not have enough funding to go to those competitions. So if they qualify for Junior Worlds or other big competitions, there's a second round that can help them with funding.
All right. So do you just save a portion of the endowment each?
We do. And we kind of just know that we have some funding in September and some funding in March.
Okay. Well, let's bring Sam Masuka into the conversation. You would have liked to have been, of course, in South Korea. And to get there, you needed to qualify. So what opportunities have you had to do that?
To qualify, so I was sixth in line to go because my team, we went to Continental Cups, and those are ranked below World Cups. So even if we had, like, we did well and we got points, but they're not worth as much as World Cup points. So we ended up being, like, alternates. And if for whatever reason our team couldn't have gone, then we would have replaced them.
Okay. You were on what team then with regard to ski jumping?
So this year I was on the junior national team, which is, like, it's not quite the national team. It's for development athletes. But at a competition, I ranked high enough to qualify for the C team. So as of next season, I'll actually be part of the national team and able to qualify for better things.
Awesome. So you did compete in the winner-take-all event that we had at the UOP, which Sarah Hendrickson ended up winning. How did you do on the home hill?
So we weren't really expected to win. It was more an opportunity for us to see how we ranked against the better girls. And since we're aiming for the next Olympics, it was kind of a practice event for us. So none of us ended up beating our national team girls, but we got to see how we placed against them. And it was a good, set goals for us.
Yeah. So how did you do, though?
So I got ninth, and it went a lot better than I was expecting.
That was ninth overall?
Yeah.
Okay.
So it was...
That means you're top 10 in the world.
Yeah. So it was good. I wasn't even expecting to compete, so I ended up qualifying to compete last minute, and it was really awesome opportunity to jump with basically my idols.
Yeah. So as you kind of watch the Olympics over the next couple of weeks, then, I mean, just talk a little bit about how that motivates you to...
It's so exciting to see, like, the girls that I've been training with be there, and the guys, too, and just watching them. Like, I've been talking to them, and they're all so excited about it, and basically getting the feel for the whole event, even though I'm not there. I wish I could be, but I also have some of my teammates are there to support on their siblings and their friends, so I just get to see what it's like to be there, because at the last Olympics, I was still a little young, so I really just watched the events but didn't really appreciate the whole experience of it all, and so now this is just, like, a real eye-opener.
Sure. So your goal, of course, 2022 in Beijing.
Yeah, our coach likes to call us Project 2022 because that's our goal.
Oh, great. Well, good luck to you. You know, I just saw a headline this morning in the Wall Street Journal that you would have to be out of your mind to try ski jumping, which is why Olympic ski jumpers actually want to be jet lagged. That was an interesting comment. I don't know why you'd want to do anything tired, but does that make any sense to you?
Yeah, I mean, for some instances, like, we'll go to Norway and we'll expect, like, we want to acclimate to the time zone, but then they'll have competitions at midnight. And obviously, if you're acclimated to the time zone, that's not going to work for you because you'll be tired. And the same thing with Pyeongchang. They have a lot of late night events. But if you stick to your time zone, it can sometimes work out well for you because competing in the morning is better for you mentally. So if you stay on your time zone, even though it's late at night where you are, it'll feel like morning for you. And sometimes you can compete better.
Interesting. Okay, well. I'm not saying that you're out of your mind, but yeah, you're out of your mind jumping that far anyway. Anything else, ladies, you want to mention?
I just wanted to say Sam is one of our athletes that started in our Get Out and Play program and has said she never would have tried ski jumping if it wasn't for that program. So just very exciting for us to see athletes that have tried the sport in our programs and now are progressing to national team Olympic trials and hopefully 2022.
Great. All right. Thanks for coming in. We'll
Thank
see you next
you.
Month.
Thank you.